Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most, because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D., and today I'll be covering the case of Rhonda Padalena in York, Maine. Let's get right to it. Right along the coastline of southern Maine lies the charming town of York. It's known for its beaches, historic landmarks, and vibrant community. Every year, thousands of tourists flock to the area to explore the Nubble Lighthouse or take a walk on the cliffs of Marginal Way or to relax on the shores of Long or Short Sands Beach. And if you're visiting the town of York, Short Sands is kind of where it's at. It's the perfect spot for getting a tan, swimming, or walking along the beach while surrounded by scenic cliffs and charming seaside shops and restaurants. Short Sands gives off that quintessential New England beach vibe, and it's no surprise that it's at the top of the list for many visitors each year. For 35-year-old mother of three Rhonda Padalena, it was one of her favorite places on earth. Her sister Jessica recalled to the Boston Globe that as a child, her family visited the beaches in York every summer. And Rhonda, the mermaid in the family, continued the tradition with her three sons and took the opportunity to put her toes in the sand any chance she got. So it came as no surprise that in late March of 2021, Rhonda made the one-hour trip north from her home in Bedford, Massachusetts, to York, Maine, and Short Sands Beach. She was there with her 33-year-old boyfriend, Jeffrey Buchanan. Rhonda and Jeffrey had been in an on-and-off-again relationship for the past 7 years, and they shared a 2-year-old son. Rhonda took Jeffrey to Short Sands that March 26th day because she wanted to show him that sandy strip of beach she had long considered her safe haven. And besides, according to Jeffrey Buchanan, the pair had finally decided to make things official and get married. It was Friday, and they were planning to get married the following Monday. The weather that afternoon was perfect. It was 70 degrees and clouds dotted the sky. It was finally warming up a little after a dark, cold winter, and beachgoers were glad to be walking the shores, taking in the salty air and blue waters. It seemed like any other early spring afternoon on the York seashore. That was until around 3:54 p.m. when, according to police documents, 911 calls came flooding in the York Police Department. One caller reported that they had witnessed a man wearing a black hoodie and red sneakers punching a person and then dragging a body behind a large rock on the beach. Another caller advised that a black male wearing a black sweatshirt, gray jeans, and red shoes had dragged a body behind the rocks. The male subject was now walking towards Funorama. Officers arrived in minutes, and one York police patrolman noticed a man on a cell phone. He thought the guy was one of the 911 callers, and he was right. The caller directed the officer's attention to the suspect. He had followed him from the scene of the assault. Police made contact with the suspect near Railroad Avenue, and that suspect was quickly identified as 33-year-old Jeffrey Buchanan. According to the Maine State Police, at the same time, other officers were directed to a large rock where they found an unconscious female. An off-duty firefighter was attempting to render aid, but unfortunately, there was nothing he could do. She was already gone. The woman was identified as 35-year-old Rhonda Padalena. Witnesses on the scene told police that they had seen the man, now identified as Jeffrey Buchanan, attack Rhonda as her back was turned to him, striking her in the head with a rock. He had then attempted to conceal her body and flee the scene. But as we know, he'd been followed. With Buchanan already apprehended, investigators turned to him looking for answers. He spoke willingly, but his story? Well, it didn't quite add up. He told police that he had schizophrenia and had forgotten to take his medicine. Police would later learn that Buchanan had never officially been diagnosed schizophrenic, but it was his story, so they let him tell it. He went on to say that he didn't remember much about the murder. He had, quote, blacked out just before the murder had taken place. He didn't exactly know what had happened. The bits and pieces he did remember were that he and Rhonda were on the beach when he saw a man running toward them, making hand gestures, and he felt threatened. And that was it. He blacked out, and when he came 2 minutes later, he felt the sensation of breathing heavily and saw Rhonda lying on the ground. That was the story. It was stupid, but it was his initial story to police. As Buchanan told his version of events to detectives, Rhonda's family learned that she had been murdered. The Portland Press-Herald reported that Rhonda's mother, Lori, first learned something was wrong when Rhonda's toddler son's daycare called and told her that her daughter had never picked him up from the center. Of course, this wasn't like Rhonda. Her boys were her life, and she would have never been late or not shown up to get her son. So Lori called Rhonda's friend Melissa, and when Melissa told Lori she hadn't heard from her, her mom called police. That's when she learned her 35-year-old daughter was deceased, murdered at the hands of the man she loved. As the family tried to make sense of it all, by 9 p.m. that night, Maine State Police detectives already had enough to charge Jeffrey Buchanan with murder, and he was taken to the York County Jail. Detectives began to piece everything together, starting with the scene. They located the rock Buchanan had used to murder Rhonda, and video surveillance taken from a nearby business that showed what witnesses had already told police, that Buchanan had hit Rhonda while her back was turned to him, and then continued striking her several more times in the head. The state medical examiner found that Rhonda had been struck so hard her skull had been cracked in 3 places. Her death was ruled a homicide by blunt force injury to the head. Evidence was also recovered from Rhonda's Snapchat. WABI5 reported that part of the initial attack had been captured by Rhonda herself. You see, she had been in the middle of sending a Snapchat video to a friend when Jeffrey Buchanan attacked her. The video showed Rhonda on the beach and then she fell out of frame. But Buchanan's arm was captured going up and down repeatedly as he beat the mother of his child and girlfriend of 7 years. The videos and the witnesses all brought one glaring detail into focus. Rhonda Padalena was blindsided by the brutal attack. She was there at her favorite place on earth, sending snaps to her friend. Jeffrey Buchanan waited until her back was turned to him before he struck. There was no other man running towards them. That man just didn't exist. And it seemed as if Buchanan had waited for the perfect opportunity to strike when Rhonda's guard was completely down. While Rhonda would have never expected Buchanan to do what he had done, as the investigation moved forward, her mother Lori spoke to police and told them that she had noticed something was off earlier in the day when Rhonda FaceTimed her from inside her car. It appeared to Lori that her daughter's makeup was smudged, as if she had been crying, and she was obviously trying to show her mom where she was and who she was with. All this according to the Portland Press-Herald. It was clear to Lori that something was going on between the two of them, in the minutes and hours before the attack. What exactly, she didn't know, but she felt her daughter was showing her where she was and who she was with for a reason. Investigators learned pretty quickly that there definitely was a reason. You see, Jeffrey Buchanan had a history of abusing Rhonda, and at the time, the two weren't even supposed to be together because there was a restraining order in place against Buchanan. In fact, Rhonda hadn't even told many of those closest to her that she and Buchanan had gotten back together, and she certainly hadn't dropped the bombshell that she was planning on marrying him. And for good reason. They wouldn't have shared in the joy of a wedding announcement. Rhonda's family and friends knew that she was trapped in a vicious cycle of domestic abuse. Buchanan had taken advantage of Rhonda's kind and forgiving nature for years and manipulated her into staying in the relationship. Rhonda loved Jeffrey, and I'm sure like many other domestic violence situations, there were good times, but a leopard don't change its spots, and soon enough, Jeffrey would be right back to his old abusive self. Rhonda would work up the courage to leave, and he would weasel his way back into her life one way or another. And as it often does, the cycle continued. Things had gone so far in the past that Buchanan had done prison time after an assault against Rhonda. According to the Essex District Attorney's Office, in 2017, Buchanan pled guilty to assault and kidnapping. The victims in that case were Rhonda and her two older sons. The details were hard to come by, but what we do know is that a distraught Rhonda told a Massachusetts state trooper at Logan Airport that her boyfriend had assaulted her and prevented her and her two sons from leaving the house, and then demanded to be driven to the airport. Buchanan pled guilty and served a little over a year in prison before being released on probation in 2018. His probation conditions included mental health and substance abuse evaluations, and that he complete any treatment deemed necessary. And just so it's not confusing, the two sons involved in the incident in 2017 were Rhonda's sons from a previous relationship. She and Jeffrey didn't have a child together until after he was released from prison. This 2017 assault and kidnapping wasn't the first time Jeffrey Buchanan had been in trouble with the law either, and he had prior convictions in Massachusetts dating back to 2013. Convictions like carrying a dangerous weapon, larceny, and possession of cocaine with intent to distribute. And not only was Buchanan a grade-A douchebag, Rhonda Petalena was the polar opposite. Friends and family described her as kind and loving. She was devoted to her sons, her friends, and her family. Rhonda worked as a nursing assistant and was studying to become a licensed nurse. She was a caregiver at heart and known for taking care of anyone and everyone around her, and also for cooking obscenely large amounts of food for the gatherings she hosted in her home with her friends. Rhonda and Jeffrey as a couple didn't make a whole lot of sense to those that knew her. But that aside, those closest to her knew that no matter how they felt about Jeffrey Buchanan, Rhonda loved him. Her close friend Melissa spoke to the Boston Globe and stated, "She just really loved him. She saw good in him when there really was no good in him. She just wanted to believe that he was her soulmate." Despite the restraining order or how her friends and family felt, Rhonda and Jeffrey had reconnected, and it seemed they were making plans for a future together. About 3 months prior to the murder, Rhonda had moved to Bedford, Massachusetts with her three sons, and it seems at some point Buchanan began living with her. On Friday, March 26, 2021, Rhonda took Buchanan to Short Sands to show him her favorite place on Earth. There were some reports that she was showing him the location because that's where they planned to get married. Regardless of the reason, that morning Rhonda sent her two older sons off to school and dropped off her toddler son at daycare, never imagining that she had only hours left on this earth. A week after the murder, friends and family gathered at Short Sands Beach for a candlelight vigil to honor Rhonda's life, raise awareness about domestic violence, and reclaim Rhonda's favorite spot. They wanted people to remember her love for the beach and not the horrific act that took place there. Seacoast Online reported on the vigil. Dozens gathered together and held pink roses and white candles with purple shields representing domestic violence awareness. One by one, candles, flowers, and pictures of Rhonda were placed at a nearby memorial. Friends and family remembered Rhonda for who she was. Rhonda had a heart of gold. She was a mother, a daughter, a caretaker, sister, and friend to so many. It was clear what had happened to Rhonda Petalena. There were witnesses to the crime and video surveillance capturing nearly every moment. So there was no question as to what had happened, but what wasn't clear was why. How had things turned violent so quickly? How had what started out as a trip to the beach ended in murder? With Rhonda gone, there was only one person who could really answer that question for sure. The least Buchanan could do at that point was give Rhonda's family answers. Just tell them what the hell had actually happened, because the story he had told about blacking out and a mysterious man running towards them when there was no mysterious man wasn't cutting it. The police didn't buy it, and I'm pretty sure nobody else did either. But if anyone was expecting the truth out of Buchanan, well, it's just not often you get the truth out of a monster, and Jeffrey Buchanan was no exception. Instead, he initially pled guilty by reason of insanity, and the court ordered that he undergo an independent mental health evaluation. As everyone looked forward to the trial, that mental health evaluation must have come back A-OK, because in March of 2024, on the eve of jury selection, despite the overwhelming evidence, Buchanan was offered a plea deal. And y'all know he accepted, and pled guilty to one count of murder, and in exchange, prosecutors agreed that his sentence wouldn't exceed 43 years. 3 years and one day after Rhonda was murdered, on March 27, 2024, everyone was gathered in the courtroom for sentencing. Somerset County Superior Court Judge Richard Mulhern presided. Buchanan's defense attorney, John Gale, argued for a lighter sentence, something around 30 years. The attorney highlighted other homicide cases with similar mental health issues and insisted that the crime wasn't premeditated. There aren't many reports on exactly what Buchanan's supposed mental health situation was, but his defense claimed that weeks before Rhonda had been murdered, she had taken Buchanan to get psychiatric care because he was reportedly suffering from delusions and paranoia that he was being poisoned and followed. His sister Brittany also spoke on his behalf at sentencing. She recalled that earlier in 2021, Buchanan had come to stay with her, and according to her, her brother's mental health was worse than ever. He talked about being followed. He thought he was being poisoned, and she had to buy him fast food because he didn't trust the food she made. She went on to say, "I'm not saying that my brother is not guilty. I just want the court to know about him today." For all the talk about mental health conditions, it doesn't appear Buchanan was ever officially diagnosed with anything that would have impaired his judgment in such a way he couldn't be held responsible for his actions. I mean, if that was the case, he probably would have stuck with the insanity defense. And if there was a significant diagnosis, chances are the defense would have been shouting it from the rooftops at sentencing. But there was none of that. They claimed he suffered from delusions, but brought little to back it up. The prosecution, of course, told a different story. They described a scenario in which Buchanan killed Rhonda all because he didn't want to commit to a relationship with her. Assistant Attorney General Lisa Bogue stated, "What makes her senseless tragic murder all the worse is that it was committed by someone she loved. It was committed by someone that she only wanted love from in return. Rhonda loved Jeffrey. I think that's clear. She wanted to build a life with him and the child they shared. But Jeffrey wasn't interested in that at all. He used Rhonda for what he could get out of her, abused her, and took advantage of her kind and forgiving nature. Until he got all he wanted. At that point, he was done. He wasn't going to commit to a marriage, so he brutally and senselessly ripped a loving mother away from her three boys, one of them being his own son. In a matter of minutes before anyone really had a chance to realize what was happening and react, he beat Rhonda to death." The prosecution hammered home just how brutal Rhonda's murder had been. The rock that had been used as the murder weapon was brought into the courtroom and handed to Judge Mulhern so he could examine it. Rhonda's family members pleaded with the judge to sentence Buchanan to the maximum, saying that 40 years wasn't enough. Lori Padalena, Rhonda's mom, gave a victim impact statement. She said in part, "Rhonda's rights were taken by the defendant. He shouldn't have any either. Her ability to live, breathe, watch and raise her boys and love them unconditionally were taken at the hands of a pure evil monster." Her sister Jessica, who was now raising Rhonda's three sons after a long family court battle, also spoke, telling the judge just how much her family struggles with the loss. Rhonda wasn't there as her oldest son graduated from high school on what should have been his mom's 36th birthday. She wasn't there when he joined the Marine Corps. Her middle son was now driving and preparing to graduate high school. Her youngest son had started school. Jessica said, "She should be able to put him on the big yellow bus, and she never will be able to because of this crime." Rhonda's three sons had to carry on through the huge milestones in their lives without their mom, all because of the actions of Jeffrey Buchanan. Her family wanted justice, and they felt the maximum sentence was as close as they were gonna get. Before delivering his sentence, Judge Mulhern watched the video surveillance of the attack. He then addressed the courtroom. He called the attack extreme cruelty and stated, "This is an act of domestic violence, completely unprovoked. The defendant executed her and she never saw it coming." The judge then sentenced Jeffrey Buchanan to 40 years in prison. He is currently incarcerated at Maine Correctional Center in South Windham, with his earliest release date set for October 25th of 2055. He will be 76 years old before he's ever eligible for release. Rhonda Padalena only wanted to see the best in people. She forgave easily and loved with her whole heart. She always wanted to help people, and that included Jeffrey. She wanted the best for him, and she probably thought at some point he would change and be the man she believed he could be. She loved him, and she just couldn't see that deep down he was a monster. Rhonda was caught in that vicious cycle, and every time she escaped it, she was sucked right back in, hoping this time things would be different. But they never were. Jeffrey was an abuser, and there was nothing she could do to change that, as much as she wanted to. Rhonda wasn't and isn't alone in this. Domestic violence crosses every race, age, gender, or socioeconomic status, and all too often victims suffer isolated and in silence. According to the latest statistics from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence, 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men have experienced some form of physical violence by an intimate partner, and 1 in 15 children are exposed to domestic violence each year. On average, a woman or girl is killed by someone in her own family every 11 minutes, according to the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime Global Statistics. That means since we've started this episode, 2 women or girls have lost their lives at the hands of someone they loved and trusted. And before the actual end of this episode, we'll likely lose another. Some of you listening to this episode are living in that cycle right now. I'm here to tell you there is hope and a way out. If there is only one thing you take from today's episode, let it be this. If you or someone you know is trapped in the cycle of domestic violence, you are not alone. There is help. There are resources available to help you break free, and you deserve it. Please hear me when I say, you deserve to live a life free from abuse. That life is possible, and there are people ready and willing to help you make it happen. It won't be easy, but I promise it'll be worth it. In the U.S., resources can be found at thehotline.org. It's free, confidential, and someone is available to help you plan your path to freedom 24/7. As always, resources can be found in the show notes. And the hotline is not only for the victims. If you're a friend or family member of a victim, there are resources for you and ways you can help. Most importantly, be there for them with no judgment. Be the person they come to when they are ready to break free. Rhonda Padalena had those friends in her life. And as it turns out, she even had an emergency plan with a close friend. After Rhonda's murder, her friend Melissa spoke to the Boston Globe and revealed that she and Rhonda had agreed on a code word that Rhonda could use if she ever needed to. Rhonda chose the word ostrich. If Rhonda used that word, it was a signal to Melissa that she was in trouble and needed a way out, and Melissa would have been there in a hop, skip, and a jump. But the attack was so sudden, Rhonda never realized the level of danger she was in until it was too late. She never got the opportunity to send that text. Her friend Melissa believes that if she knew her life was in danger, she would have sent it. She stated, "I don't believe for 1 minute she would have just sat there and not done anything. I believe in my heart she would have texted me." Rhonda Michelle Padalena was born in Winchester on June 2, 1985. She studied cosmetology at Shawn Sheen Valley Technical High School and always loved her hair and nails to be done. She got her medical assistant certificate at Lincoln Technical Institute and was working as a nursing assistant in urgent care. She loved her 3 boys, and everyone who described her mentioned her big, gigantic heart. And that, my friends, is all I've got for this week. I'll be back next Thursday with an all-new episode, so make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't already so you don't miss it. In the meantime, you can find me on Instagram at @least_of_these or my Facebook at @leastofthesepodcast. And if you're sick of ad interruptions, I've got good news for you. You can get all your episodes ad-free just the way you like them for just $2 a month. And as a member of Patreon, you'll be the first to be notified when new tiers will be launched with exclusive episodes and a few bonus surprises. Head on over to patreon.com/leastofthese to support the show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. A plea deal. All the evidence, but Jeffrey Buchanan was offered a plea deal. I know it's faster, cheaper, and the family of the victim doesn't have to sit through a trial. But this guy gets a plea deal? The murder was caught on surveillance. Like, what was his defense going to be? It wasn't going to be insanity because that clearly wasn't working out. It just seems crazy to me that a plea deal would even be considered. They had everything. They had witnesses. They had surveillance. I mean, what else could you want? A plea deal? And I don't know this for a fact, but I have to assume the way Rhonda's family spoke, they would have been okay with a trial. They would have been okay with a life sentence. That's what he deserved. You don't get out of jail after you've done that. And 76, like, I mean, that's old. 40 years is a long time. I get it. But at 76, I mean, people live way longer than that. He doesn't deserve to ever be free again. I'm so annoyed with the justice system and the life sentences. It aren't life sentences. It's literally insane to me. And it's insane that people get plea deals regardless of the evidence. Because like in a perfect system, a plea deal would be when there's like huge risk involved. But we offer plea deals to people when the evidence is overwhelming all the time, you know, because it saves taxpayer money. But it also allows criminals to go back out on the street. So are you really saving that much money? Because then they get to commit like a whole different crime. And then we got to do this all over again. We could have just got it over with the first time. I don't know. He really shouldn't have got a plea deal. I don't care what nobody says. I'm here to tell you. It's just so sickening to me that he would attack her at her favorite place. You know, of all the damn places, not that that should ever happen, but to do it at her favorite place, you know, and don't come at me with he's like legally insane either. He's not legally insane. He's not quote unquote crazy. He waited for her to turn her back. Premeditated. Also, he tried to cover his tracks. If he didn't know the difference between right and wrong, why was he dragging a body behind a rock to hide it? Also, why was he walking away? He wasn't insane. That's why they didn't go with that defense, but it's like that gets thrown around so much that it basically means nothing. Do you know how many of those actually work? Not very many. Like, you got to be able to prove you didn't know right from wrong. And just because someone has a mental condition, that doesn't mean you're not responsible for your actions. It's your job to keep your mental health in check. It's not an excuse. People have mental health conditions all the time. Most people have at least one. I'm so tired of excuses. You know, in Natalie's case, we had the fibromyalgia defense. And this one, what? He was paranoid? Like, that's a defense? Get out of here with that. Get out of here with that. And why is it always in these cases like this? She was so kind. Like literally everything I read, big heart, she loved everybody, heart of gold was mentioned like so many times. Why is it always the best, the nicest, the sweetest with some fucking douchebag? I don't even know another word for this worm. Ugh, gross. She deserved better than that. She sure did. He was a slug. And hopefully he doesn't make it out of prison. And that's about all I got to say about that. This case is very sad. And I meant what I said. If you're still hanging in here and you yourself are trapped in a relationship where you're being abused, whether that's mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, I don't care. You deserve better than that. You do. And if nobody's told you that, let me tell you that. You deserve better than that. Nobody deserves that. And trust me, there's a million other fish in that sea. You ain't got to stay with the venomous one, okay? If your man's a pufferfish, well, those are kind of cute. I don't know. If your man's a sea urchin, and I don't say this to make light of the situation. I know how serious it is and can get, but you're not stuck with a sea urchin. You know, you deserve a Prince Charming, not a sea slug, okay? And it's scary and it's hard, but reach out. And hell, if you're scared to talk to thehotline.org, you can. My inbox is open. We'll figure it out. We will figure it out. Because I don't want to tell your story on this podcast. I don't. I really don't. So yeah, got a little serious here tonight and the hot take. But I feel very strongly about this. I do want you to hear me. You are worth it. And you deserve better. And I think we're going to end it there tonight. All right. Well, I will definitely talk at you guys next week. I'm going to go feed a baby goat. If you haven't been on Instagram and seen the baby goat that I've been taking care of for the past, I think it's been a week now, a little over. No, it's been a week. I got one more week of bottle duty before he goes back to my dad's pasture to see if he can hack it out there. We'll see. I'll keep you posted. But if you haven't seen him, he's super cute. And it is time for his night feeding, so I am going to go do that. And I will talk to you guys next week. Y'all know I love you more than my luggage. Bye, boo thing.